And now, the Last Word on Habs podcast, brought to you by the Last Word on Sports Network. Let's start the show.
Welcome back to the Last Word on Habs podcast. I'm Connor LaPalme, and as always, I'm joined by Johannes Wilden. How's it going, Johannes?
Season 3, Connor. We made it 3 years. This is amazing. Yeah.
I was going to say, actually, we had some tough negotiations in the offseason with the network, but we're back on the air. Here we go.
Let me just say, it's important to celebrate anniversaries.
Yes, I agree. So, 3 years for us. So here we are a couple of days before the NHL regular season is about to kick off. The Canadiens' first game is on Thursday, the 3rd of October. Before we get to anything regular season and expectations, I think we should talk about, briefly at least, because it was a while ago, the Canadiens' offseason. Last time any of you heard us, we did our free agency and NHL draft kind of preview, so it's been a moment. So I'll just dive right in here, and then I'll pass it off to you for your opinions, Johannes. But, you know, the Canadiens in free agency, well, I guess I'll start with the draft quickly. I think you might agree, I was kind of surprised the Canadiens were able to land Cole Caulfield. I think the kid has one of those natural goal-scoring abilities you can't teach. You know, you hear about it all the time. I'm pretty excited. I hope, you know, he continues to develop and nothing, you know, he becomes a future sort of sniper, kind of player the Canadiens have needed. For I don't know how long they haven't had a guy who can consistently score, or someone they can consistently bank on to score goals. But, I mean, we'll leave the draft alone for now. I just wanted to touch on that. I was surprised that he fell to the Canadiens. The offseason, the big move Marc Bergevin, the Canadiens did, was the offer sheet to Aho. And we can talk about all the other depth moves after, but, you know, at the time, for me, it was surprising that they made the offer. And it was signed, considering I was kind of in the camp of a lot of the pundits and experts where I thought, you know, this offer isn't too, big or, you know, not scary, I thought. I understand the front-loaded nature of it. It was trying to make it a tough pill to swallow in the first year for a team that might be cash-strapped. But, you know, it was matched really quickly. You know, for me, like, it felt that was his big move. It was sort of nice to see him try, Bergevin, I'm speaking of now, try something daring. But I think it was almost, it felt a little, hollow is not the right word. But, you know, he made a big move. People got excited. But in the end, it wasn't, I think we all saw, it wasn't a strong enough offer to actually, for Carolina to pass and take the compensation. So it felt a little hollow that way. That was just sort of my feeling, you know, I'm doing this not to placate because, you know, I hope he's not working in that manner. But, you know, it felt a little like I tried to do something big and it didn't work again. But now I'm going to go back and sign more of my depth guys. I don't know. You can chime in.
Yeah, I mean, there. I think it with hindsight, we can definitely see it was performative. I don't know that anyone on the day said, oh, for sure, this isn't going anywhere. I think it's one of those cases where, you know, with the benefit of hindsight, everyone knew right away it was a bad call. I think what was exciting was this is a provision that the CBA allows. Bergevin rolled the dice and went for it with a new owner that seemed to be making bizarre cost-cutting strategies. There was absolutely a no-lose situation for Aho. Sure, the Canes signed. Bergevin covered his butt in the sense that he could say that he went after an elite center, which the Canadiens and everyone knows the teams needed. It was a swing and a miss. I do find it somewhat ironic that the Canadiens will be starting their season with the Aho grudge match, and that's going to add a little extra sass to Thursday night's season opener. But I just think, you know, I feel like pundits say, oh, well, the NHL is so boring and no one ever tries to do anything. And then when someone tries to do something, they say, oh, well, it wasn't enough. It wasn't enough. It was what it was. They thought, I mean, don't forget, Aho signed it. So The thing that annoyed me about all of this, and I don't want to go on too long of a Bergevin rant, although if you get me started, it'll be hard to stop me. It really bothered me that he came out in the press the week before training camp to say that they were 90% sure Sebastian Aho was going to be a Montreal Canadian, because that, you know, it makes no sense that they, I mean, obviously that they thought it was possible. But to say that they were 90% sure when the team matched right away means that you're either an idiot or you're getting bad advice. And either way, that's not a good look for a GM of a storied franchise. So that for me started the bad Bergevin taste in my mouth from the off season. But you're right to highlight it. It was a big deal. There'll be lots of, there was that obnoxious Twitter battle that seemed to take up far more of the summer than was strictly necessary. But look, the CBA allows it. The Canadians did it. The Canes matched. We're all going to move on.
Yeah. No, I was happy to actually kind of see that kind of thing because, you know, it's there and it's rarely used. And I understand people are are always so afraid to give up all the draft pick compensation because, you know, everyone is always more seduced by what can be than what is. But, you know, I was happy that he did it. It was aggressive, which is something I think most people have criticized Marc Bergevin for not being. But, you know, when I saw the number, I was surprised that he signed it because, you know, he figured he would probably command a bit more. And maybe it was like he said, maybe he just wanted the process to be over with. You know, as if we looked at all the other sort of big-name RFAs, they were holding out up until, you know, I think the last two signed on Sunday or Saturday, right? So, you know, most of the big name guys held out until late September. So maybe Aho, take him at his face value. He wanted to just speed up negotiations and get it over with. And then, you know, there's always the fun conspiracy theorist part of some people and, you know, me too. Where you think, you know, well, you know, Bergevin's friend Rick Dudley works for Carolina. Maybe, you know, he's doing him a little help by facilitating this signing at a number they can digest. Obviously, that's not the case, but, you know, it's fun to just sort of play along that because people go out of their way issues with Bergevin.
Well, no, fair enough. The fun thing that I was liking was this idea that, you know, my prediction a couple years ago that the Montreal Canadiens should be embracing their Finnish recent history.
Yeah, that too.
And I kind of like the idea of having, you know, three or four significant Finnish players on the Montreal Canadiens. But, you know, that was what it was. I mean, I guess the big other off-season signing was Ben Chiarot out of Winnipeg. And the Winnipeg Jets, I think it's fair to say, are regretting not signing him right away, given the decimation that's gone on. Although I guess they got some recent good news, but still their blue line is looking awfully confusing. What do you think of Chiarot?
I mean, look, they needed help on the left side of defense. Everyone knew that. I don't know that Chiarot, okay. I think we knew that they needed help on the left side of defense. The idea was to find someone to play with Shea Weber, someone who could move the puck, generate offense. And that's not what Ben Chiarot does. I think he's a serviceable defenseman. I think he slots in very well on the second pair. You know, I think he'll be good. He's another physical player. He's kind of not going to let anyone mess around with Carey Price. We saw it against Ottawa on the weekend. You know, he's not afraid to drop the gloves. And it's nice to have guys like that. It's just
I mean, if you were going to drop a prototypical Bergevin defenseman signing like Ben Chiarot, that's his picture in the dictionary
and,
or whatever.
You know, and the Habs do need a bit more of that kind of mean on their blue line, I think. So I'm not totally upset. I think at the time I was kind of just rolled my eyes a bit because I was partly kind of saying, well, maybe, you know, this is going to do the whole thing. I thought the Canadiens were going after Jake Gardiner, which we found out they were. I don't think anyone thought Jake Gardiner would stay a free agent as long as he did. And as it went along, you know, you start thinking, well, maybe they can get him at a reasonable cost because my concern was, you know, you're going to get Jake Gardiner. Everyone kind of wants him because he's the only real puck-moving defenseman that can play on the top pair that's available. But then, you know, you figure, okay, well, that might drive up his value. But then as it went along, I hope, you know, you think maybe they can get him at a reasonable price. And then they brought in Chiarot, and you know, it's fine. I don't think he'll be a problem. But I think they still have the same issues they had last year with, you know, Victor Mete has looked well, good beside Shea Weber last year, you know, from what we've seen. But he's not, he doesn't give the Habs enough offense.
No.
And, you know, God bless him. Hopefully he'll score his first goal at some point. But, you know, they need more. They need a better player. And not that Victor Mete is not an NHL player. I think he's proven that. I think there's a spot for him on this team, but I think he's miscast on the top pairing. But anyway, that was my disappointment with the Sherratt signing. I think it makes sense. I think they needed that, but you know, you're just hoping for a bigger splash. And you know, after last offseason where Bergeron made a bunch of big splashy moves that everyone loved, he kind of fell flat this year because there was Sherratt was the big one, and then the other signings were Nick Cousins and I don't know, more depth stuff that Bergeron does well. But
yeah, I'm in on Cousins. I'm in on Cousins. I think he's a perfect fourth line energy guy. I like what he brings. I like he's got some grit, but he's also got some offensive. He sees the ice really well. I think it's exciting when he's on the ice. I can't explain to you why. I think the defense, you're absolutely right. I mean, I think Bergeron was in on all the big free agents. You know, so he's done a better job of managing his reputation as a manager. It started with the Aho stuff, and then we've seen a steady trickle of information, whereas normally the organization is very tight-lipped, that they tried. I think the bigger problem is why no big names want to sign in Montreal. And, you know, it's the dual language, it's the dual media, it's the fact that, you know, this perennial nonsense about taxes that makes me think nobody understands how taxes work. But anyway, but also where the organization is. And I think that's the bigger problem. They're not, and we can get into this later, but they're certainly not Stanley Cup contenders. And from where I sit, they're still a bubble team, given the improvements every other team in the division has made. So
yeah, well, I agree. We'll get to that. But, you know, the big thing is they traded Andrew Shaw. And I can't, we'll get to it. We'll touch on it quickly, right? The guard of Andrew Shaw. And I don't know that Nick Cousins replaces what Andrew Shaw brought. And you know, it sounds kind of crazy to say that because, you know, Andrew Shaw. Well, I think we both kind of came to appreciate him despite his tendency to take dumb penalties. But, you know, he did bring a lot to the table, I think, and was able to give the Canadians something, especially in the forward group, that they lacked in terms of, like, you know, grittiness and toughness. And even though he wasn't the biggest player, he played big, if you know what I mean. So
I've definitely heard that storyline. I'm okay with trading Shaw, and I think the only reason Bergeron gets rid of Shaw is because he's worried about injury stuff, specifically concussion risk. And I think the reality is, if Shaw's going to be play the way that he's going to, given his stature, he's forever going to be a risk for injury. And so I think, you know, the Canadians are replete with wingers. And we're talking about that as some, you know, predictions that folks are making about you know, a shakeup that we might see via trade. But I think overall, you know, the off season was sort of a stay pat sort of situation. There was a lot of effort made, and we heard lots about all the effort that was being made. But ultimately, no big names. Now, one reason for that, I think, at least in part, is the wealth of young talent that was really on display in the preseason. So we haven't really spoken since a few exchanges back and forth, but I'd be intrigued at your impressions of the preseason, specifically focused on the talent pool that's coming up in this organization.
Yeah, you know, a lot of guys impressed, which was nice to see. Obviously, the biggest standout was Nick Suzuki. I think he's got a bright future. He definitely can play in the NHL. I do have some reservations about him playing this year, which maybe I'll get to a bit later, but right now he's on the team, as far as I know. So unless something crazy happens in the next little while we're recording here, he's on the team. I mean, Ryan Poehling looked pretty good. I mean, we all remember his debut for the Canadiens at the last game of the season last year against the Leafs, where he gets the hat trick and the shootout winner, and it's like, you know, you couldn't have scripted it any better unless, you know, they win that game to get into the playoffs. But you know, those two guys did what they had to do, I think. And obviously they did enough because they're still there. You hope Ryan Poehling, you know, he had a concussion. Hopefully it's nothing. I mean, he played. I know he played in the last preseason game, but you hope it's nothing lingering because, you know, we all know concussions are finicky at best. So hopefully it's nothing.
Yeah, and the Canadians did announce today that he's been sent down to Laval.
Oh, okay,
and
there you
the word, so they're now at 23, so Suzuki has definitely made the team, at least for the first nine games or whatever. Yeah. But I think we will see Poehling in Montreal. Yeah. I think the concussion sort of threw his development off, and I don't know that he got enough conditioning in. But I think as soon as there's a roster spot, we'll see Poehling. I'm a big Poehling guy. I'm excited by that guy. You know, Josh Brook, I never thought Josh Brook was ready to make the team, but I think he is right on the bubble of being, you know, we may see him in Montreal for a few games down the stretch. I think it's possible that other folks work their way in to the lineup. I think what's nice is that there are a lot of hungry players who are just about ready to make that step. And I share your concern about Suzuki. I just think he's a little too small, a little too unseasoned to do the 82 game grind. But I think it's the Kokkonen approach, right?
I guess, but
they're gonna give him 9 games, and they're gonna make a decision after 9 games, and then they're gonna give him 41 games, and they're gonna make a decision. You know, it's gonna be a step by step approach, and when he starts to flag, he'll be sat. And I think it's less likely that we see Suzuki for the entire year the way that we saw Kokkonen, because both at a depth issue and in terms of an age and development issue. But hey, fans can be excited for this first week of play anyway, and seeing what Suzuki's going to bring in the regular season.
Yeah, I mean, look, like I said, he definitely played well enough to make the team. We spoke about it a bit last year with Kokkonen, and you know, I'm a firm believer in the rookie wall, which is also a reason why I kind of felt Poehling would probably do well to start and play in the AHL. We kind of talked about it, I think, at the end of last year, where, you know, he's playing, especially coming from the NCAA, right? I think they play at most maybe like 20 games in a season, something like that. Like, you know, not a ton of hockey. So I think the rookie wall would be very real for Poehling. So I think it's good if he gets more ice and gets used to that kind of schedule. And I guess the same thing for Suzuki, right? He might come out with his hair on fire the first, you know, month of the season and look amazing. But, you know, it's twofold, right? And making the jump from junior to the professional ranks is very difficult, and not many players can do that. And I'm not saying Suzuki can't, but, you know, temper your expectations and also that rookie wall. And I think, you know, if he becomes a player you're kind of counting on, which is great, but, you know, if he hits the wall and he dries up, which is natural and can happen, you know, I know you could say you just sit him, but then you have to have a guy who's going to play. It looks like he's going to be playing in the top six. You know, you have the guy who's going to be able to slide up and play and produce like that. So it's just that I'm a little concerned about. I don't think, you know, I think you're right where they're going to give him the 9 games and see how he goes. And I think from there they'll take the next steps. And I think if he does slow down, they're going to send him down. And, you hope the city doesn't lose their minds, because, you know, they lose their minds with everything related to the Canadians. But to your point about the depth, I guess, is what we'll call it. It's fresh, refreshing to see that it seems like they have NHL-ready bodies in the minors that can come up and play and contribute if they need to. And that's something that's kind of been lacking. And by play and contribute, I mean guys that aren't fourth liners, that aren't going to give you anything, you know?
That's the big point, right?
Yeah.
That's the big point. We're not talking about sliding somebody in on the fourth line for, you know, 6 minutes of ice time or something. These folks, Suzuki anyway, is going to see a lot of ice.
Yeah, for sure.
Going to have lots of opportunities. And whether that's on the penalty kill, whether we end up seeing on the power play, like at least short term, it's super exciting.
Yeah, and I guess one name we're also not really talking about right now is Cale Fleury, who I think impressed probably the most. I mean, people had some expectations for him, but I mean, it looks like he made the team, unless you know something I don't. Did he know?
No, I think he's in the same boat as Suzuki
for sure.
Is.
But he played in Laval last year, so I think he's got his conditioning might be more used to the grind of a full professional season. And I think that's good. I think he's kind of like Victor. Sorry, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, the thing about Fleury that I like is that he's tough, but he's also got offensive upside. So you know, he, that first pass is really good, but he's also tough on the blue line. And so, you know, it's going to be a steep learning curve, but hey, you know, just appreciate we have two rookies who have made this team at least out of camp. And now, you know, the regular season is whatever it is, but that's very exciting because you have two on the team right now, and you have two more in Poehling and Brook that are not far away. I mean, I honestly think Poehling's going to make this team. He'll play more games in the NHL this year than anywhere else. But look, that's just exciting stuff. And I'm actually going to be in the Bell Center a week from Saturday. Oh, wow. So I'm pretty pumped to, yeah. Nice. I wonder who I get to see.
Yeah, and, you know, it's kind of, he's kind of, not that he was an unknown, but he's a little bit like Found Gold, kind of the way Victor Mete was a couple of years ago. And, you know, if they can kind of, I don't mean to make it sound, I mean, if they can kind of luck into this player who, this on the defense, and I mean luck, I don't mean it in a bad way, but, you know, I don't think people were expecting Cale Fleury to show out the way he has so far. You know, I thought people were kind of excited and maybe he could be one of the last cuts and show a little something, but he wasn't ready, and he looks like, but you know, he looks like he's ready, and it's, again, like you say, it's refreshing to see that there's this kind of depth and these guys that are ready to come, and they're pushing guys out, you know. I think, did they cut, who, because I know in the defense it was a little tricky, and I know you said Poehling got sent down, but what about, I know there was an issue with Mike Riley and Christian Follin. So I don't know if those guys have been...
Both Follin and Riley are on this team. There's eight defensemen, 13 forwards. And so, for now, I think that's the big thing. It's a for now situation.
I think for sure they're going to try and move at least one player, but maybe two.
Yeah, I don't know if it's Riley or Follin. I presume it'll be Follin just because the right side is as tough as it is. But... I don't know. I mean, they have a little more depth now on both sides of the ice. I'm still, if I look at the team, I still worry about center. I still worry about the blue line. But, you know, this is what it takes when you reset, rebuild, renew, whatever, right? You're going to have to let the young guys play. You're going to have to manage that in a way that ensures they're still developing and they don't, as you say, hit the rookie wall, which, you know, I think we can expect to see. But the off season, I think we don't have, there were no big moves. I think from a public management point of view, in terms of, you know, reputations, I think Bergevin made it known that he was in on a lot of things, even if he wasn't successful. That opens a whole separate problem, but the public perception is he's trying and always does try. And camp showed us that we have some young players, and for the first time in many, many years, you know, maybe since that the PK Gallagher was one other player, like, yeah, when they were sort of coming up, this is the first time when we see, like, wow, these are going to be NHL players, and we are getting to see them earlier than many expected. So preseason, certainly camp and preseason, pretty exciting, although I don't want to talk about the Toronto losses, but I do think that they're indicative of a broader problem. But, I mean, what are your expectations for this team, Connor? I'm curious.
I got to think they're about the same as last year. I think that they're a bubble team. I think they're a bubble team if everything goes right, and I hate to be a bit of a negative Nancy. But like we talked about a bit, a lot of things went really, really right for the Canadiens last year. I don't necessarily think they're going to be top five in 5-on-5 scoring again. I just, you know, not that these things are predictive, but, you know, last year they were top five, 5-on-5 scoring. But, I mean, before that, the last, I don't know, 10 years or whatever, they always struggled 5-on-5. So I'm thinking there's going to be a bit of a regression there. I think some of the players who put up career seasons are going to have a bit of a regression. I still think there's enough on this team, if they play the way they did last year, to still push for a playoff spot. I think, you know, the next logical step in development is the playoffs. However, I wouldn't be shocked that sometimes when teams show progression, there might be a bit of a letdown season before they really make the push to the playoffs. So I wouldn't be surprised if this year the Canadiens had a bit of a a little bit of a step back, but I still think they're going to be on that bubble. I think they're going to be competing for a playoff spot, you know, into March in there, kind of like last year, but we'll see. I mean, the thing is, the Great Equalizers, if, and not that we saw any indication in the preseason to the contrary, but if their power play turns around, you know, then all bets are off. If they can get a half-decent power play, I think that would propel them, I think. Because we all, you know, last year that was the big problem. Their power play was abysmal. And, you know, even if they had a league average power play, they would have probably been in the playoffs. But anyway, you know, if that comes around for, I don't know how, but if it turns around, then I think they might be really knocking on the door. But it's tough, you know, in the Atlantic, it's Tampa Bay, Boston, Toronto are probably all locks, you know, injuries notwithstanding. You got to think now Florida, who has been a team, one of those kind of dark horse teams that a lot of people have been picking the last few years to sort of break through with. I think now with Joel Quenneville, you got to think that they might be ready to sort of take their next step. I mean, the Atlantic Division is stacked. I mean, Buffalo is going to be probably a bit better than they were just based on the talent they have. So it's going to be, you know, Ottawa, I think, is a clear bottom feeder. But, you know, there's a lot of teams in that division that are going to be pushing for the playoffs. And it's going to be dicey. And, you know, it's going to be fun, I think. It's going to be, you know, it seems like all division games are going to mean a lot. But for the Habs, I mean, you know, a bubble team. That's where I'm going to land on it finally. I think it's going to be a bubble team. And I think they're going to come up short again, unfortunately. But that's just my gut feeling. And also, I think it's just, you know, recency bias of what I've seen the last couple of years.
I mean, I tend to agree. This is a bubble team. I think there's a potential, and I think it comes down to what you said, the power play. I cannot imagine we're going to have the same year where so many players had career years. The 5-on-5 scoring, I want to be like a little bit more optimistic on that, because I get what you're saying about sort of the trends in Montreal, but Montreal has never played this fast pickup style for as long as they've tried to play it. Because I think even though there were some blips last year where the old Claude Julien, you know, the old dog learn a new trick stuff, but in general, this is a fast, quick team that can score in unexpected ways. And so it is possible that 5-on-5 doesn't regress as much as some people assume. And I think, as you say, if they only were the lead average on power play, they are certainly knocking at the door. And let's not forget, they were, you know, a measly 3 points out of the playoffs last year. And it really did come down to that last week. Now, in the end, it didn't feel as close as it turned out, you know, after all the points were tallied. But for a hot minute there, we thought it was possible. I think the big question for me is not do they make the playoffs, but do they get there in the right way? And that means managing their young talent. That means playing up-tempo. And it probably means, Connor, making a trade. So you got some trade bait there? I mean, we all know that it's impossible that Jonathan Drouin will be traded because Bergevin said he wasn't being traded.
Well, that doesn't mean anything, but yeah.
His word is his bond, Connor.
Yes, of course.
Well, just give me one example of when he's ever said one thing and done exactly the opposite.
Yeah.
I think what's weird about that, though, is when he says, like, some basement in Toronto. Because it there's no need for that extra. All he has to say is, we have no plans to trade Drouin. He's a key part of this team. While I'm always looking to make this team better, there's no plan right now to trade him. That covers all eventualities. You don't, if you decide to then trade him, you say, well, look, I had a chance to make this team better. I had to take it. If you don't trade him, you say, see, we had no plans to trade him. But to bring up this basement in Toronto stuff and then seemingly being referred to Elliot Friedman or, you know, wherever that first report came, given his track record, like, it just seems like, you know, if he gets traded, he will have shot himself in the foot twice. Because yeah, he will have said, he would have mocked the idea that he was going to trade him, then said he wasn't trading him.
Yeah, I don't know. I agree. It's an unnecessary swipe at the media. I mean, there's already a bit of a contentious relationship with them. And, you know, you can sort of see it when he has to do his press conferences. You can tell he doesn't like it when the media challenge him. you know, there are people who are Bergevin fans who love it. There's other people who, you know, kind of don't think it's, you know, it kind of comes off smug and arrogant. I kind of fall in the latter. I know the media here can be stupid. I know that people can come up with all kinds of crazy rumors and start trouble. You know, it always happens. But, you know, guys who are kind of respected in the industry, and I know, you know, there's people on Twitter who, if someone writes an article that might, you know, slightly be questioning the overall plans and design of what might be happening, are automatically, you know, hacks and idiots and they're haters and whatever. But, you know, Elliot Friedman's not a hack. I don't think Arpin Basu is a hack. I think these guys are legitimate journalists just doing their job. I don't think Eric Engels, you know, is a hack or an idiot or looking to cause trouble. These are guys that have legitimate sources. These are guys that, you know, do reporting, and they try and do it honestly and fair. And I think it's just, again, I find it unnecessary. And to your point, if he ends up trading him, he looks like a doubly the fool. It's like all the other times where he said it wasn't going to happen, and then he did it. And then it was just kind of like, there's such an easy, like you just said it, that's the easy way out. That's what another GM would do. He would say, well, you know, I'm always trying to make the team better, but, you know, I don't plan on moving on from this player. That's, you know, that's it. Yeah.
What I don't get is it's Montreal. There's double the media, so you can be misrepresented in both official Canadian languages. And in any other GM, that would mean that you would be more careful. But somehow with Bergevin, that makes him less careful. And I want to give you an example of something that I got into a Twitter. It was one of my worst Twitter experiences, I think, ever. But basically, one day, Bergevin said, we're not interested in Markov because we have a lot of young defensemen, including Alexander Romanov. Now, Alexander Romanov can't play in the NHL this year. So, yes, he definitely mentioned Cale Fleury. He definitely mentioned Victor Mete. He definitely mentioned Josh Brook. But there's no need to mention Romanov in reference to what you're going to do on the blue line this year because you can't get him over. So it's just not a necessary thing to say. And then the next day, when he's challenged by a reporter on the Aho thing for what's got to be the 100th time, he breaks news by saying, yeah, we were 90% sure we were going to get him. It looks imprudent. It doesn't look like you've thought through your communication strategy in either official language. And then it's just sort of bumbling, and it bumbling from one media event to the next, to the point where, as a fan, I don't believe anything that Bergevin says. That's not a great place to be, though.
Yeah, I think if you've been a fan of sports long enough, you know to take almost anything a coach or a GM say with a bit of a grain of salt. And I know you're saying more than that. So I kind of agree, though. It's like, you know, especially with the trades, right? He said it about Subban. He wasn't trading him. He said it. I'm not sure if he mentioned about Pacioretty, but I feel like he said at least a couple of times where he was not interested in trading the player, and then, you know, lo and behold, a couple of months later, this guy's gone. So, you know, just there's no your point. You have a good point. It's like you're putting it out there for no reason. If you want to be sort of this close, he likes being the sort of close to the vest kind of guy where, you know, leaks don't come out and, you know, no one knows what's going on, all the secrecy. But then he floats this stuff out there and causes like a weird buzz, or like you said, puts his foot in his mouth when, in fact, the rumors are true. It's just, yeah, it's part of his communication issues, I think. I know a lot of people, again, people who are big supporters of Marc Bergevin, think everyone spins everything and everyone misconstrues his words and things like that, which kind of gets tiresome because, you know, I'm going to say on balance, but I think we're both in the same boat. We're not necessarily super fans of Marc Bergevin's tenure. I think we're both kind of excited about now where they're going, finally.
He's had a good year.
Yeah.
I think we can both agree to that.
Yeah, but I mean,
but it's just weird that at a time when you're having such a good year, why you have to put your foot in it on just about every press availability.
Yeah.
He's saying something that doesn't make any sense.
Or it doesn't need and to like, yeah, it doesn't need
it's
to be
one
said,
thing to say, well, the coach and the GM are not going to tell us the yeah, honest truth of their day-to-day. But there is a way to have this sort of anodyne speech where you know, people can construe whatever they want out of it. You know, on the Markov thing, he could have said, well, Markov's been a great player for us. If there's a way we can work something out, we're going to. And then offered him a PTO, which Markov said he wasn't going to take. And then at the end of the day, he doesn't look bad.
Yeah.
He tried, right?
Yeah.
So, and the worst case Ontario, Markov comes to the PTO. It doesn't work out. They don't sign him.
No, exactly.
It's just, there's just no need for the, there's no need for the animosity that he seems to bring to these encounters. And it just leads you to this idea that either he doesn't know what he's doing and he's over his depth. And that's something that many of us have suggested over the years, or he's just not well suited to that job. I don't know, whatever. Well, but all that said, and I can say this, you know, it sounds like I'm saying two things at the same time. Both those things said, he did have a good year. So why he can't just bask in his good year and say, look at this young team. I said I was going to fix the problem. This is what I've done. We're excited for the next year. We're going to keep on building and keep on growing. But he doesn't say that. He's got to bring up old things about Radulov, and he's got to bring up old stuff about what looks like bad blood with Markov, and, you know, bring in Romanov for some weird reason that doesn't make any sense, and talk about 90% sure of something that everyone thought was not going to happen. It's just weird.
Yeah. It seems like he's got a bit of a well, again, it's something we've been talking about for a while. He needs to communicate better. And, you know, maybe he's an emotional guy and we don't really see it. And he likes, you know, he holds on to things, which I think is not a great trait for a general manager if it's true. I mean, I'm speculating 100%. But to your point, if he's going to keep bringing up stuff that, you know, he feels he was slighted on, or he holds grudges or has bad blood against people, then that's not a great way to do business in the NHL. I don't know if he's out of his depth, but I think he likes, maybe he's enjoying that he's had a good, I mean, I wouldn't say this offseason was as great as last offseason, but still, I think it's, the way the preseason's unfolded, things are looking promising with, like, you know, with Suzuki and Poehling and Fleury and all the young guys that look good. But, yeah, I don't know why he goes out of his way to sort of poke, I don't want to say poke the bear, but, you know, make a scene about that stuff. Not make a scene, but he makes it news, like you're saying, right? It's something no one's thinking about. And then he kind of puts it out there in the ether, and everyone now has to talk about it. And then people are wondering why we're talking about it. So I agree, he can be, his press conferences can be a little weird that way.
Look, in Bergevin adjusted terms, he had a great year, mostly because he didn't make any big obvious errors. And that's sad to say, but I mean, the reality is that, you know, he didn't bite when he shouldn't have. But let's get back to this trade thing. So. You know, we sort of joked about the Drouin situation, but, you know, if you look at this team, they are replete with wingers and they have more coming. So can you imagine a scenario in which Drouin and a second tier prospect were packaged for some help on the blue line?
I mean, that would be ideal. I just don't know what Drouin's value is right now. I mean, I know he's on a very digestible contract. He's not overpaid, really. But, you know, people have sort of seen he was a bit of a problem in Tampa Bay, although, you know, people tend to kind of crap on the players more when these things, when they have these kind of fights with management. And he's come to Montreal, and I think part of the issue is a bit of overhype from, you know, the GM and maybe a bit of the media about what exactly Jonathan Drouin is. And granted, I think he's still, what, he's 23. So, you know, he's not a finished product, but I was kind of talking about it. I can't remember who I was talking about it on with Twitter. And someone was saying, you know, Radulov in Montreal had 54 points and everyone wanted to sign him for whatever he wanted, you know, in 2015 or 2016. And Drouin is making, had 54 points, you know, and he's at 5.25 or whatever he's at, you know. It's just interesting how people react, and I'm like, yeah, the point totals are the same, but Radulov was there. You saw him every night. He was trying to make a difference, and it seemed like in bigger games he rose to the occasion, whereas it seems like with Jonathan Drouin, at least from what we've seen the last two seasons, big games he tends to disappear. And I mean, we're not even going to talk about the last half of last year where Drouin was essentially a black hole of production, and, you know, whatever line he was on would suffer because he was there kind of dragging everyone down. And I don't know, you know, obviously he's, it's an issue with of confidence and things like that, but, you know, he's got to figure it out or he might find himself out of the league in a few years because, you know, you can't disappear if you're a relied upon player. And, you know, it goes to his value. I think teams will look at him and think if, you know, you want, I think obviously the second tier prospect will definitely help with the return. But if we need someone to play with Shea Weber, they're not going to just give you a top pairing defenseman for Jonathan Drouin, like Jake Evans, for example.
No, I know, but you know, I do wonder about, you know, the problem in Tampa Bay for Drouin is that they had too many good players. He couldn't really find a consistent spot. The problem in Montreal is that they play a system that at least last year didn't seem to really suit him, especially in the last half when Julian tried to tighten things up. I wonder how he would do on a more freewheeling team where he had less responsibilities and he could really just devote himself to one side of the ice and going up and down and making those flashy moves. The thing that I found really interesting, our friends over at TSN 690 talking a lot about the idea that it's not clear where he slots in because he hasn't seemed to find chemistry with any of the centers so far. And that's kind of worrying to me that like, there's no one that he seems to play well with on a consistent basis.
He had a little something with Domi at the beginning of last year, but it didn't last.
Yep.
So that was, you know, it seemed encouraging, but like, the second half of the season, he was a black hole no matter where he went. And I feel bad, sorry to cut you off, but, you know, it seems like they're going to saddle him with Kokanyemi. And hopefully, you know, you feel bad for the kid if Jonathan Drouin is going to be playing the way he did last year and even the way he's been playing in the preseason. You know, you hope he doesn't suck Kokanyemi into his black hole or whatever.
So is that Armia on the other side of that?
I believe so. I just...
So I have a confession. I have a confession to make. I am kind of out on Armia.
Really?
I liked him initially. I thought he was a big body. He seemed to have some touch. But I think he's one of those players that's like almost but not quite. He's like, he's almost but just not quite.
Well, I think he's perfect for a third line role, though. He's a big body. He does have a little bit of scoring touch. I'm not going to say he's a goal scorer. He seems like he's in the right places. I think he just doesn't have the skill. I just feel bad for Kokanyemi because, you know, it's a second year. Everyone's worried about the sophomore slump and all those things. And, you know, I don't think he had a great preseason either. But again, you're expecting...
He definitely didn't.
Yeah, you're expecting him to be one of your top two centers of the future. And, you know, okay, playing with Jonathan Drouin, in theory, should be a good thing. But, you know, again, if he's bad Jonathan Drouin, it's not great. And then on your other wing, it's Armia, who... I feel like last year, Kokanyemi set up a bunch of times with opportunities, and he just doesn't have the finish. So you're kind of putting
him
you're just putting him with two guys that I don't know if they can... Okay, in theory, Drouin should be able to keep up with Kokanyemi skill-wise. Armia can't. I know Armia is there to be a plugger and dig up pucks and things like that. But still, if you know if he puts it on a stick, he's got to be able to finish the play sometimes. And it just
no pun intended. Yeah. No pun intended.
Yeah, no.
No, but listen, Armia is going to bang and crash. He's going to make room for Kokanyemi, who's going to set up Drouin, who's going to finish. That's the way they draw it up. The other thing about that is that Armia is going to protect his young Finnish center. Don't forget, Armia was on Kokanyemi's wall growing up. They're from a similar place in Finland, and Kokanyemi's followed his career. So there's going to be some of that. The question is, we know that Drouin is not a power play quarterback. I think that experiment now has to be put to rest. He's a great passer, but the question is, can he be more of a finisher? And maybe playing with Kokanyemi, because just the way that he sees the ice and he creates opportunities out of nothing with those weird, that long stick and that weird gait. He just seems to fool defensemen and turns over pucks and creates opportunities. And maybe, I don't know, maybe that's the answer.
Yeah. You're hoping it's just a little, you know, not unfortunate, but it's interesting. You know, they're trying to jumpstart Drouin with Kokanyemi and usually it would be the other way around. But yeah, hopefully, you know, I'm hoping for the best. You know, you want to see Drouin develop into a more consistent player. You want him to develop, you know, you want to see him reach his, you know, and even if he's a 50 to 60 point player, that's fine, but he needs to be consistent about it. He can't, be gangbusters in October and November, and then they'd score 35 points, you know, in the before Christmas, and then, you know, score 20 points the rest of the way. You need more consistency from the guy.
And so I think we could both agree that Drouin's on the hot seat.
He's...
Who else are you worried about this year?
Worried about? Arturi Lehkonen. I think right now he's slotted in the with Domi and Suzuki. I think, you know, he has a lot... He brings a lot to the table in terms of what he can do, even if he's not scoring. We talked about it kind of ad nauseum last year. You know, he's defensively responsible. You can put him out there against the team's, you know, best players, and he'll... You know, take care of business for the most part. Plays on the penalty kill, smart. You know, does all those things coaches love well. But he's also on this team to score goals, and he had a very strong rookie season with 18 goals. And it's been a big old struggle since then. So hopefully, you know, the line with Domi and Suzuki, he can start to produce a bit more regularly. I mean, my concern about that line in general is I think they're going to be small, so they might get, you know, worked over a bit, and that's sort of where the missing Shaw might be, even though Shaw wasn't big. I mean, there's no one there to make a ton of room, but I think Lehkonen, it's been 2 years of sort of waiting for him to sort of break out. I get it, he's also still young, but, you know, I think sometimes patience for a player you're relying on to score goals, they might run out sooner than later. So he's a guy I think needs to really step it up. And, you know, he's going to be kind of, I think if he has a slow start or if he has a tough half year, or, you know, if he has a tough year overall, he's going to, a lot of eyes and a lot of ire is going to be directed in his direction, I think.
I hear you. And for many of the same reasons, I'm slightly worried about Victor Mete. Not that he hasn't looked good, but this is sort of a make or break year for him. You mentioned earlier his first goal, but I also think that just more generally, there were a couple moments in the preseason where he and Weber were playing pass in their zone, sort of looking for the breakout, and it didn't look great. And I just wonder if I'm really hopeful that he can take the next step, but I think we ought to just realize that because of the lack of depth on the blue line, he's being asked to play a role that's probably not fair, and he's done as much as he can do and more than could be reasonably expected, in my view. But I think he is a little bit on the hot seat, playing on the first pair with your, you know, one of your two franchise players. It's time to put up, and I'll be very interested to see whether he can rise to the occasion.
Yeah, it's a fair point. I think a lot of people have been talking about this as long as Victor Mete has been with the Canadiens, right? I think a lot of people kind of underestimated how good he was. People didn't think he'd be able to last long term. I think he went when he was sent down to the minors last year was a big wake up call, I guess. And he kind of came back reinvigorated, refocused, and he looked really good. But yeah, I think you're 100% right. If things kind of break down on the top pairing, it's going to be on Mete. And I think he's there out of necessity, not because of necessary. You hate to say he hasn't earned it because he has played well, but he's there because he's left-handed shot. He's a puck mover and a skating defenseman to pair with Shea Weber, and the Canadiens don't have another player like that on the left side. So that's, you know, he kind of falls into there by default. And, yeah, I think, although I don't know if he'll get as much ire as other players, because people just seem to really like Mete, because he's a bit of an underdog story. So I think, I think you're right, he's really got to sort of start delivering more from the role he has. Because I think, you know, like we were talking about before, you know, the Canadiens are looking for a top-pairing defenseman to play with Weber. You know, they were in on Gardner when he's, you know, before he signed in Carolina in, I guess, the end of August. So, you know, they're looking for an upgrade on defense. So he's got to really prove that he can, I guess, keep his spot. Although I think we all agree that it shouldn't be his spot forever. But, you know, yeah. He's a guy, I think, that's on a bit of a hot seat because the more I'm thinking about it, the more I'm kind of talking myself into the fact that he really needs to start producing more from his spot to really sort of prove that he should be given that the role he has, and it's not just because of necessity.
So we have a few players on the hot seat, so to speak. Who are two players you're really excited to watch as the season kicks off?
Excited to watch? I'll do well. I'll, I'm tempted to say Suzuki because obviously it's the easy answer. You know, he looked good, you know, especially the last memory we have of him playing hockey with the Canadians was the overtime winner against Ottawa in the last preseason game.
And I hate to interrupt you, but, like, let's just remember it took us overtime to beat the Ottawa Senators.
Yeah, I know. No, I know.
And the week before, we couldn't beat the Marlies.
Yeah, so it was a bit of a rough end to the preseason. So, yeah.
But I'm excited that he outworked, you know, Jean-Jacques Pigeot or whatever and won Habs the puck and put it in. Yeah. I mean, let's just temper our
excitement. Oh, no, I'm just saying, right? It was like a bit of a signature moment for the preseason for Nick Suzuki in the Habs uniform.
The headlines wrote themselves, right? Yeah. Suzuki makes the team.
Yeah, no, but I'm saying I'm going to look forward to see Max Domi. And I was kind of, you know, he was a very big surprise last year in terms of how well he played at center. I think he led the team in scoring. He exceeded expectations, I think, last year. And I'm interested to see if he can do it again. And I'm not necessarily expecting the same point total, but if he can have the same kind of, command, let's say, or if he can be as dominant and, you know, we know he's a tenacious player and he's feisty, but, you know, if he can keep up his production, I kind of enjoy the way he plays. He's kind of like a Gallagher with more skill, which is, you know, a good thing. I'm excited to see Domi play in his second go around because, you don't want it to sort of be like, you know, he had the first good rookie year in Arizona and then the second year he kind of fell off a cliff. You're really hoping that he can keep it going, and I expect him to be able to keep it going, and I expect him to be, again, one of the Canadians' best forwards, so I'm excited to see how he does in his second year with Montreal.
Right on.
You?
Right on. I definitely want to watch Suzuki play, and I want to see if he can bring consistency. I don't think it's a question of skill, but consistency over the first 10 games, and that's all I'm giving him. I think the Canadians have given him a 10-game tryout, and we're going to see how he does at the end of it. But honestly, for me, it's Kokkonen, and the reason is we need him to take the next step, not only for the organization, but for his sort of personal development. I mean, this is a key player for the future of the organization, and we need to see him doing more than we saw in the preseason. And I think it's fair to say preseason doesn't really indicate anything, but there were moments when he did not look good. I'll give you a sleeper too. I don't know why, but I have this sneaking suspicion.
Uh-oh. No, I'm wondering if it's the same person I'm thinking of. Anyway, go ahead.
I think Philippe Deneau is going to have a fantastic breakout year. I don't know why I think that. I just think he's going to take the next step. He's often compared to like Patrice Bergeron or others, but just without that scoring touch. I just think he's going to take the next step. I think there's something, he is continually trusted in these key roles defensively, but now has been paired with one of the most successful lines in hockey. And I wonder if he's going to be able to finish more on the shots in addition to contribute so much from the center of the ice.
Yeah, Deneau, I agree. You know, the funny thing about last year is he had trouble scoring. I think he ended up with, 18 goals, but I think he had a bunch of them. He scored in bunches, right? I think he had at least one hat trick, and I think he might have had two last year. So it was just kind of interesting that he was able, he bunched his goals. But still, yeah, I get a little annoyed when people compare him to Bergeron, because Bergeron, I think, is like an elite player.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's never fair to compare someone to that kind of player. But I know what they're trying to say, right? He's like a Bergeron light. And, you know, I heard in the preseason in the Ottawa game, they were talking about how, you know, last year he was brought up and I think received votes for the Selke. And once you start getting sort of in that circle, you kind of get to stay there. And I think that's a great thing. I think that's perfect. The Canadians need a guy like that. I think, you know, they haven't had a guy that, you know, in the Selke conversation since, I think, Guy Carboneau.
Yeah, Carboneau.
I could be wrong, but I know Carboneau anyway. So it's good that they have that kind of player. And like you said, he's starting to be able to sort of chip in a bit more offensively. I think if he can hover around the 60-point total, you know, being on the top line along with all of his defensive responsibilities, I think that's a good thing. I think that's attainable. And I think if he does, if he does take that next step, it'll definitely do wonders for the Canadians. So, yeah, I think he's a good a good player to keep an eye on. And I, you know, you just, the only thing is you hope, because of the dual media issue, you hope he doesn't sort of get propped up too high by some people, because that tends to happen. Just like they tend, media tends to pick their scapegoats. Like, so far in the preseason, a lot of the French media have been harping on Kotkaniemi. And it's just interesting that they find these players they just want to latch on in and just drill over and over and over. And, you know, if you're listening to that media, you can't help but sort of, it kind of, you know, kind of seeps into your thought process, or you keep hearing them say this kind of like, you know, he's bad, he's bad, he's bad. And then you go, yeah, he is bad. You know, and it's happened before. It'll happen again, but it's just one of the problems with being in Montreal is that, and I'm going to say, I'm not saying it doesn't happen on both sides, but the French media does it way more, and they also are more forgiving to French players, but I don't want
to
get into
that. I think there's something to, there is something to that, but
it is.
Deneau remains my sleeper pick.
Yeah, no, sorry.
I think he's definitely someone to watch.
Yeah, to go back, I didn't mean to kind of went on a tangent. I agree. I think he's a prime for a breakout. I think he's prime. I think he might, you know, if everything goes as well as it can, I think he might actually sneak into the top three or four for Selke voting. I think that would be, you know, an amazing season for Philippe Deneau, and I think it's achievable.
I think it's achievable, too.
So one more little sleeper. A guy that kind of has been catching my eye, he started last year, Jordan Weal. I know he's a fourth line player.
Yeah.
I know he, you know, you don't expect much. He just seems like a guy, again, he reminds me a lot of Paul Byron. He's got the wheels. He's got a bit more skill than people think. Seems like he's a really smart player. If we're judging by the preseason, he's going to see power play time. I think he's going to have a pretty good year. He seems like one of those guys that's always been on the cusp of sort of breaking out. And whether, I don't know why, but, you know, teams either trade him or he gets, one of those guys just gets sent down to the minors for whatever reason. But I think if, again, if all things go right, and I kind of look at the lines here, if the fourth line seems to look like it's Byron and Cousins, or Cousins on the left, Thompson and Wheel. I think that could be a lot of, that would be, that's a very good rotation and great fourth line. And I think Wheel's a guy to keep an eye on, because I think he does a lot of things right. And he's just fun to watch, at least from what I saw at the end of last year.
Yeah, I'm way in on the Wheel deal.
Yeah. All right, so.
So we have a couple games. Yes. Thursday night in Carolina. And
two rivalry games.
Yikes. Yeah, right, exactly. We have the Aho grudge match on Thursday. And yeah, then the perennial, English versus French hockey battle in Toronto on Saturday.
Yeah. You can start. Sorry.
I don't like either of these games for the Canadiens. I don't think that they have hit their mark yet for the preseason. And I think Carolina crowd's going to get in their head a little bit. I think this Toronto team is just scary good. Mooning security guards to one side. I just think, God, man, when you just look at that team all the way up and down the lineup, it starts to get very, very nerve-wracking for those who are playing against them. So I'll definitely be watching that game with a lot of interest, but I'm not sure this is going to be a great a week for Habs fans.
I don't know. I think Carolina might regress. I think they overachieved a bit last year, like Montreal. I think they got by on their incredibly defensive style. But, I mean, you know, they got an otherworldly performance from Peter Mrazek, who's been nothing but a sort of journeyman backup. And I think, who's the other? Curtis McElhinney also was giving them amazing goaltending. So, I don't know. I think those guys might come back down to earth. And if they don't get that amazing goaltending, I mean, we kind of saw what happened when they played Boston in the playoffs. You can pick them off pretty easily. So I think it all depends on if their goalies are going to be as good as they were last year. I know they have a very solid team. I think they have one of the best defense corps in the NHL. You know, but I still think, you know, they had found gold, or whatever you want that expression is, with their goaltending last year, because I don't think anyone expected Peter Mrazek and Curtis McElhinney to be as good as they were. And I don't think it's a sustainable plan to have them as your goaltenders, although I'm not sure if they're both still there. But, I think
I think Carolina can be got because I think the whole offer sheet thing is more in the Carolina fans and heads than in Montreal, right? Montreal just tried to get him. He signed it, which means he was interested. And then, you know, they matched it. But like we've said, there was that Twitter battle that's gone on forever. You know, people are dragging reporters through the mud. So it's just interesting. But I think Montreal's going to win that. I think the Toronto game's not going to be pretty based on what we saw. And you know, not to put too much stock in a preseason game or two, but the fact that Toronto, I mean, I think it was a good, it was a really troubling sign. And I know, you know, Montreal seemed to be in control of that game and they couldn't score, which is it in itself a little worrying when they lost to the, essentially the Toronto Marlies. But then they kind of were able to, even though the identical 3-0 losses aren't good, but it was a little fresh, a little more, to sort of see how the Leafs were able to dominate Montreal. And despite the fact it was only 3-0, you know, Montreal, the score was flattering to the Canadiens, if you could say that. So I don't know. It's going to be a rough Saturday. I think the season over, I think Montreal is going to be able to take care of Carolina. Because, you know.
So somehow. Sorry, go ahead.
No, it's fine.
Well, I was just going to say somehow we managed to get through a whole podcast without talking about Carey Price or his new backup, Keith Kincaid. So maybe we should just sort of finish up on a quick goalie take. Kincaid, an upgrade on, why can't I remember his last name? Oh. Who's the Finnish backup from last year?
Niemi. I was about to say Budai. Jesus. Anyway.
I think he's an upgrade. I think I worry about Carey Price. I'm glad that they have a goalie that can play more games, and let's hope Kincaid can look more consistent than Niemi did last year. I think we are getting to the point where you cannot ask Carey Price to play 60 games a season for you, and so I wonder now. I'm very curious about the usage rate and how what that's going to look like, but. Carey Price has been very vocal that while nobody else in the Canadiens organization seems to believe in windows, he does. And I'll be curious to see not only does he win the big games and not give up pucks like he did the other day, but whether Kincaid can take up more of the role and provide some wins in close games.
Yeah, I mean, we kind of saw how it affected the team down the stretch, right? They were afraid to put Niemi on the ice because he was just that awful. One thing I heard, I happened to be listening to Leafs Lunch for some reason.
Yikes.
Well, whatever. It wasn't actually that bad. It was an interesting thing I heard that Frederik Andersen wanted them to get a backup that can play so they can sort of split time more at the beginning of the season.
Yeah.
And then he'd be able a little more fresh down the stretch. And I think that's actually a really smart idea. And then I know the Leafs are a bit more, have more depth and talent than the Canadiens do, you know, on balance. I think the Canadiens rely on Carey Price probably more. But I think it'd be a good idea to not just play the backup on back-to-backs. You know, you do at the beginning of the year. And not to say that games don't matter, but games are less important in the beginning of the year. So I think you might be able to, you know, give Carey Price more of a break to start. And then when you need to ride him down the stretch, he's not as worn down. Whereas, you know, I feel like they play him, they were only giving him days off on back-to-backs, which I think is, you know, not necessarily the best way to manage his load, his workload, I should. So it'd be good if they were able to give Kincaid more games, especially early. And I think they will. I mean, you can't be much worse than Niemi was last year. So yeah, it'll be fun to see. You hope they do it anyway. Because if they're expecting Carey Price to play 70 games or 68 games or whatever, you know, it's not a, it doesn't seem like a smart plan if that's their plan.
And let's remember that Kincaid really shared, you know, starting duties last year. And so I think that is one of the reasons why he was of such interest, that he could play that much. So I mean, obviously, we talk about the Canadiens as a bubble team. It really, in one way, comes down not only to scoring, but to goaltending. And so,
yeah, you could point to the couple of the games that Niemi kind of blew. as well. I mean, everyone likes to, will say the power play, but if, you know, Niemi is able to win that game in Tampa around Christmas, or there's a bunch of other games where he was, you know, leaking goals, you know, if he was able to actually give the Canadians an actual chance, who knows? But, and, you know, we can't live in the past, hindsight's 2020 and all that, but if they had a competent backup, you know, then maybe things would have worked out differently last year as well.
Amen. So, Connor, let's talk about our schedule. We are going to try and get back together on Sunday after the Leafs-Habs game Saturday night, and we're going to be shooting for weekly pods.
Yes, we
here
are.
On the Last Word on Sports Network. Please go ahead and subscribe through all the usual channels so you can hear our hot takes and fantastic impressions, right?
Yeah, exactly. That's a very good point. Make sure everyone subscribes. Tell your friends. Tell your parents. Tell anyone who's interested in the Habs that they should listen to the Last Around Habs podcast, because we are giving you the best and freshest takes and opinions you'll hear anywhere. You know. And we like to have fun.
Yeah, and the Lord knows the world needs another Habs podcast.
Yeah, there's not many of them. The Canadians don't have a big following. No one likes to talk about them. So, you know, get on board with us, because, you know, we're the only game in town, apparently.
Get on board. I like that. All right, Connor, talk soon.
Yeah, take care, Johannes.
Have a good first week of the season.
Yeah, you too, guy. Hey, we got to be a little happy. Hockey's back, so let's go.
Let's go.
All right. Bye.
Bye.
This has been the Last Word on Habs podcast, brought to you by the Last Word on Sports Network. Join us next week. Until then, see you on the ice.